The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Over the past 4 years, our country has seen the sickness and corruption of the Washington swamp exposed like never before. You've seen it. You've been watching it. Did you see? 3 days ago, it started again. The Justice Department said Russia may be involved in our elections again. You see that, Mr. Congressman? Great congressman from Texas. You see that? Russia. It's Russia. And, you know, the whole world laughed at him this time. 2.5 years. Not a phone call made to Russia, not anything to do with Russia, except stopping their pipeline and lots of other things that these people approved. And they said just the other day, the attorney general, we are looking at Russia. And I said, oh, no, it's Russia, Russia, Russia all over again. While weaponizing law enforcement to jail political opponents here at home. They do that, and they think it's wonderful. It's like third world country only. They loot the economy. They give trillions and trillions of dollars to their left-wing cronies while you pay the cost of rampant inflation, which is what's happened. Rampant inflation, bad energy policy, and just pouring out money like it was water. They run your country for their own power and profit while erasing your borders, assaulting your freedom, indoctrinating your children and selling your jobs to China, Mexico, and all of these other foreign lands. But with your vote this election, their lying, cheating, thieving, hoaxing, and plotting will come to an end. It's going to come to an end. We're going to cast out the corrupt political class. We're going to restore our republic. And we are going to drain the swamp. And we're going to do it once and for all. We're going to get it done. First, I will end forever the weaponization of government and the abuse of law enforcement against political opponents. Under Comrade Kamala, Christians and pro-life activists are rotting in prison for the crime of praying in public. How about the people they're arresting because they were praying in public? These people are sick. People like Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, good people, were locked up for following the advice of their lawyers. And as everyone knows, the Harris-Biden DOJ is trying to throw me in jail. They want me in jail. For the crime of exposing their corruption. We expose their corruption. They go after the people that expose, not the people that do the corruption.
He gets it. I was just thinking as I listened to that this morning that you wouldn't have heard Trump say those kinds of things in 2018, 2019. Remember, he became famous for the counterpunch. You go after him, he's going to strike back. You try to impeach him, he's going to fight back. You go after him in a debate, he's going to swing back. That, my friends, is Donald Trump going on offense. That, I'll read you a statement that he released over the weekend. It's incredible. He sees it. He sees the attack. He sees what's happening. And he's going after them in a very different way this time around, with a very offensive mindset. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on this good Monday morning or Monday afternoon or evening, wherever it might be, or whatever time zone you might be listening to this in. We can give you the live stream of this show at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. If you go there, make sure you give us the thumbs up. And both of those sites, of course, have these programs posted after the fact as well so that you can listen or view on demand. Lots and lots to get to on today's show, as you would expect for a Monday program, as we try to reel in all of the most important stories from the past 2 or 3 days. That statement, by the way, from Donald Trump, the so-called cease and desist statement that he sent out on Truth Social, picked up on a lot of Twitter accounts over the weekend. He says, I, together with my attorneys and legal scholars, am watching the sanctity of the 2024 presidential election very closely because I know better than most the rampant cheating and skullduggery that has taken place by the Democrats in the 2020 presidential election. He knows. He was the one. They used it to rig, as I say. I mean, this is Donald Trump. He's, for one, he's staying with it. He won't let go. And good for him to show some backbone. Quite unlike Bill Kristol and Vice President Dick Cheney from the George W. Bush years. His daughter, Liz Cheney. They're all coming out making these statements. Donald Trump this, the greatest threat since whatever. It wasn't that long ago when Dick Cheney was Hitler. I'm old enough to remember when he was the evil genius working behind George W. Bush, and the radical left hated him. How times have changed. Look at what one man, coming in the spirit of Jeroboam of 2 Kings 14, look at what one man has exposed on both sides of the aisle. It's astounding, really, to watch. I used to read Bill Kristol, Weekly Standard. Some good material there back in the day. What happened to these people? Donald Trump is living in their brains rent-free. That's what's happened. Now they're fully exposed. They're on board with Kamala and all of her abortion policies, her immigration policies, her economic policies. Yeah, I guess in Dick Cheney's mind, that's to be preferred over someone who wants to put America first. Okay. So he joins the Kamala Harris train. On which nobody is going, by the way. As I said last week, I mean, her campaign is so dreadful. I mean, it's all coming down to the debate tomorrow night. And never mind what Al Sharpton says, that Trump's going to come after her and he's going to look bad in front of the women that watch the debate. We'll see. I guess we'll see about it. How many times has Donald Trump been counted out? I mean, after they stole it, who could have predicted this? Well, we did, for one. Let me just give you that tweet from Bill Kristol. This is yesterday. He says, distressing, depressing, alarming, after everything, after January 6th, after clear evidence, a second term would be far more authoritarian than the first, after the ever-increasing radicalization of MAGA world, Trump now has more support than he had in 2016 or 2020. That's right. That's Bill Kristol saying, how is this possible? We have attacked him from every angle. And he keeps coming back, and he comes back with greater support than ever before. Who could have predicted this? Well, we were saying it a day or two after they stole it. And Trump knew that they stole it. We knew that they stole it. Just to continue with this statement. He says here, therefore, the 2024 election, where votes have just started being cast, will be under the closest professional scrutiny. And when I win, those people that cheated will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, which will include long-term prison sentences, so that this depravity of justice... He's got that in caps. DOJ is the acronym. I wonder what he's getting at there. The depravity of justice does not happen again. We can't let our country further devolve into a third world nation, and we won't. So he's putting them on call, and this is why they're furious. How dare he go on offense? Okay, maybe a counterpunch or two. But how dare he go after some of these cheaters, these thieves, and actually put them in jail? Well, like you heard in the cold open. Look at what they've done to Steve Bannon, just on the advice of his attorneys. No, because of attorney-client privilege, you don't have to go before this sham committee. And so he didn't do it. And now he's in jail. Peter Navarro is in jail. They want Donald Trump in jail. They're probably pushing back the sentencing hearing. Mershon's sentencing hearing, I guess till after the election now, sometime in November. Maybe as one final attempt to take him out should he win in November, in case the election, in fact, is too big. The win is too big to rig. So out comes Trump going on offense. What a sight to see. I mean, this is, again, as he keeps saying, they've been exposed. These traitors, all of these actors, these bad actors guilty of treason. I gave you the Bill Kristol tweet. Play the Dick Cheney statement, or I think this is MSNBC commenting on that. Clip 3.
Liz Cheney confirmed that she'll be voting for the Democratic nominee in November. And yesterday, her father, the former Vice President Dick Cheney, confirmed that he'll be doing the same thing. In a statement, he wrote, quote, "In our nation's 248-year history, there's never been an individual who is a greater threat to our republic than Donald Trump. He tried to steal the last election using lies and violence to keep himself in power after the voters had rejected him."
He tried to steal it. Okay. What happened? Next, I'm waiting for George W. Bush. When's he going to come out of the woodwork and say, you know what? I've got to go with Kamala. Remember the picture? You had George W. Bush, all the former presidents, except for the bad orange man. Bush, Clinton, and the dear leader, Obama. Oh, yes, they were working. They were working together on the scamdemic. They wanted you to be aware that everything had to shut down. How idiotic does that seem right now? I mean, how can you not look back on this and say, yeah, I guess these are just kind of normal times that we're living in? That tweet from Bill Kristol, I mean, that perfectly captures the frustration, the mad dog rage of these lunatics that are all things get Trump. We tried everything. And now he's got more support. Well, you can thank yourselves in large part to that. But I just want to focus your attention on the fact that he's going on offense. Ready for war. This was January of last year. Ready for war. And then, as I've showed you more recently, I mean, here's the September issue. Why is God protecting this man? Something unusual is happening. This is not normal. How does one individual survive so many vicious attacks, even an attempt on his life, an assassination attempt? Well, it's because there's a strong hand from someplace that's intervening on his behalf. And hopefully it serves as motivation to dig into the Word of God. What is God working out here below, and why? Why is it happening? Well, we've got some literature that you need to get through, if you can. America Under Attack. Not if you can. You must. You must get through it. America Under Attack, U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. These are foundational texts that have to do with Bible prophecy. And your Bible is a third of it is prophecy. How important is that? God wants to give us a preview of what's coming. He wants for us to see. The proverb says that people without vision, they're going to perish. We need to see what's coming. And more important than that, act on it. Turn to God in repentance. That's why God's bringing back Jeroboam. Because he's giving us one final opportunity to be made right before God. To turn to him in humble repentance and faith. And to just trust him, to put our lives in his hands, to let him intervene on our behalf. So there's Donald Trump really going on the offensive. And he's out there, even this one, what he said last week, of course. Vladimir Putin came out and said he endorsed Kamala Harris. And Trump had a few things to say about that. Clip 2.
I don't know if you saw the other day, he endorsed Kamala. He endorsed Kamala. I was very offended by that. I wonder why he endorsed Kamala. No, he's a chess player. He endorsed Kamala. Should I be congressman? Should I be upset about that? No? Huh? Was it done with a smile, Ron? Was it done with a smile? I think it was done maybe with a smile. I don't know. Who the hell knows? Nobody's going to figure it out. They're about 19 steps ahead of us, but this whole Russia thing. Nobody was tougher on Russia in history than Trump. And the person that knows that better than anyone is President Vladimir Putin.
Okay, maybe not in history, but that be that as it may, there was no invasion of Ukraine under Donald Trump's watch. And you look at Hillary and the infamous reset button and the dear leader saying that he just needed more time. He needed to get past the re-election and then he could work with Vladimir. Those people appeased Putin. And that's why Putin's on the march right now. And then for them to get up and say, Russia, Russia, Russia. It's laughable. It really is. This was Obama's deep state guy, John Brennan, over the weekend talking about Russia. Clip 7.
And it's very clear that just like in 2016 and in 2020, the Russians have a clear preference for Donald Trump to be in the Oval Office, because having, to quote Vice President Harris, to have an unserious person in the Oval Office is a real coup for Vladimir Putin.
As if Kamala is very serious. We can get into her accent later if we have time. But this is John Brennan, who, by the way, voted communism in 1976. Right here, not in Russia. No, right here in the United States. Now, this was probably the time when you've got, you know, Tim Walz and Bernie Sanders traveling the communist world. I'll bet they love the CCP. Tim Walz has been there like 30-some times. Bernie Sanders honeymooned in China. So there's the guy who voted for the Communist Party USA in 1976, saying that Russia clearly favors Donald Trump. It's just turning into a big joke. Yesterday, Tom Cotton, he's on with Dana Bash. She's got to be one of the worst as far as just the regime's propaganda pieces. She's on there with Kamala and Tim, throwing the softball questions, not asking anything about Tim's family, his brother, nothing hard-hitting on Kamala. Well, this is regarding the story last week. Remember the Russian company, the platform that's got these commentators on it that paid to just spread their message in America. No restrictions on their voice or their message or anything. But Dana Bash, I mean, she's got to continue with the party line here. No, this means that those conservatives on that platform, they are Russian agents. Tom Cotton pushes back and she's like, I can't believe you're defending them. Clip 4.
But I also think it's fair to say that a few memes or videos in the vast sea of political commentary is not going to make much of a difference in this election, nor has it in past elections as well. What did make a difference in the last election is the lies about Hunter Biden's laptop that more than four dozen former intelligence officials lied about in the middle of that campaign. And most networks, to include this one, bought that lie hook, line, and sinker. That did make a difference in the election. But I think a few videos or commentaries, which, again, you shouldn't do if you're out there in the business of commentating on elections, is not going to make a difference in the vast sea of commentary we see.
It sounds to me like you're downplaying the fact that Vladimir Putin is using people like Dave Rubin, whose show you went on in February, as a tool for his propaganda.
So I'm not downplaying Vladimir Putin's designs or Xi Jinping's designs or the Ayatollah's designs to try to influence our election. But using money to try to promote memes or videos on the internet is not exactly going to make a huge difference. Again, you shouldn't knowingly do that. I don't know if any of these people knowingly did it.
Do you know young people who get some people only get their information from those memes and videos?
But, Dana, what would really be catastrophic is if a foreign government, say, hacked into the voter registration system during voting, or hacked into election machines and erased votes, or turned off the electricity in a big city on election day. Those are things that are serious threats.
Yeah, I love Tom Cotton, but they need to take some admonitions, indirect, but nevertheless, from Donald Trump, who's on the offensive now. Right in the middle of that exchange, he says, no, what really influences an election here is when you cover up the Hunter laptop story 4 years ago, including you and your network, And notice she just brushes that aside and says, it sounds to me like you're downplaying the impact of these Russian bots and memes. I mean, what if some young people get their news from the memes? To which I would respond, what about the people that get your news? What about the adults and young people alike that get the news from CNN? And then you're there actively suppressing the truth about everything that's on this Hunter laptop until you get well past the 2020 election. Total interference in elections. So obvious. And in her mind, I guess, it's not even worthy of a discussion. Oh, you think she could come back and say, well, now, you know, regarding the Hunter laptop, I mean, we were a little late on. No, she just goes right over it and says, it seems like you're downplaying the story from last Tuesday. And Dave, it's Dave Rubin now. He's rigging the upcoming election. Most people don't even know who that is. It's unbelievable how blind these people are, how blinded by bias. That's right. They're blinded by their own bias. They only see one track, and that's the communist echo chamber. And they stay comfortably within that. They're not going to veer off course. And if you push back ever so slightly, they're going to be shocked. It sounds like you're downplaying the influence of Vladimir Putin. It sounds like you're dismissing the story of Russia, Russia, Russia. Oh, well, why ever would we do that? This Judge Mershon, this broke Friday afternoon, so we didn't have a chance to discuss this, but he's pushing back the sentencing. That was coming up to September 18, and there's differing views as to what's behind this, but you can expect for Sundance over at Conservative Treehouse to be skeptical that this is anything positive, given the way these people have gone after Donald Trump at every turn. I mean, he really and truly has to be ready for war. And when you're going to war, I mean, your best defense is to go on the offensive. That's the point my father makes in the spiritual sense in the Overcomer booklet. But that's what this is about. I mean, you know the introduction. We've read you this many times before. It's all these forces aligned against Donald Trump, including Bill Kristol, including Dick Cheney and his daughter Liz. The whole establishment. I'm just waiting for George W. Bush. Sundance says, I guess Mershon pushed it back to late November. And he says here, let me present a factual angle of how the deep state may use this. Judge Mershon is a rogue lawfare element. Do not try to convince me he is bound by any legal or judicial limitations. You know, some on the conservative side have said maybe they're pulling back now because they see everything that they've done to try to destroy Donald Trump has made him more popular. But I think I'm more with Sundance on this. There's something that they're plotting behind the scenes. They've tried everything. We've made that point over and again on this program. They've tried everything. Sundance sees this as an insurance policy for an election win that's maybe too big to rig. Maybe this will be the last feather in their cap should Donald Trump win comfortably in November. And there's sources talking about how that in Pennsylvania he has to win by at least 3% because that's what they're able to harvest. That's what they harvested last time around. If it's bigger than that and he wins these swing states, then maybe it's going to fall on Mershon to put him in prison to cause a constitutional crisis. You would think the Supreme Court would intervene pretty quickly with something like that. And as we're seeing, I mean, Donald Trump is getting some favor. There's a dozen different ways that this could play out. But here we are. Here we are just, 8 weeks away? It says, further on, if you accept the possibility of political lawfare, then consider Judge Mershon may be positioned as an insurance policy against President Donald Trump taking office. The scenario would be President Trump winning the election, too big to rig, and then finding himself being sentenced to prison after his victory. Not only would this scenario play into the heads hands of those who promised to defeat Trump, even in victory. It would also create constitutional crisis, upend the political system, and likely trigger something akin to a civil war. Exactly what the intelligence community, deep state, would relish. They want this. They want civil war. They want to bring down the system. They want to topple the government. They want total control. They want absolute power. Some interesting remarks, given what we know about what's coming, based on Ezekiel 4 and other passages. It says here also, under this scenario, those Sea Island folks advising RFK Jr. and Ron DeSantis might have something other than altruism behind their current endorsement status. Just say. So he even wonders or doubts some of those that have come out to endorse Donald Trump, saying that they may be, you know, motivated by politics. They may be power hungry. Here again, how can you really trust anyone that speaks from the swamp? This Pennsylvania story, this was at The American Thinker, and it's based on True the Vote, some of the studies they did following the election steal in 2020. But it points out how that if Trump's going to win Pennsylvania, which this American Thinker piece thinks that he will, but will it be a big enough win to negate the cheating that they're able to get away with? He mentions that 3% figure. It says if that happens, the Republicans will have to take, if they're able to cheat their way to victory, the Democrats, if that happens, Republicans will have to take extraordinary steps to dispute the stolen election. To understand the need for an extra 3%, we must review the serious problems of the 2020 election, which remain today. They haven't fixed it in Pennsylvania. Now, like Bill Kristol notes, Trump's more popular than ever, and he's in and out of Pennsylvania constantly. But it says here, Pennsylvania does not require ID when voting by mail. Can you even believe this happens in the United States of America? It could just come in through the mail from wherever, just someone's signed name on it, and that's it. No ID, nothing. It says that is bad enough. But just before the 2020 election, Pennsylvania's Supreme Court eliminated the only other way to determine if a ballot comes from a real voter. It ended signature matching. No signature matching and no voter ID. So anyone can scribble anything on a ballot and just send it on in. And a lot of them do. A lot of ballot harvesters do. Do you think people who have been lying, stealing, murdering, anything that they can do to try to maintain power, you think they wouldn't do a little ballot harvesting? You think they wouldn't do a little cheating on the side to ensure that the bad orange man stays out of office? Let's not kid ourselves. It says here that absurd ruling remains in effect for 2024. Further on, it says the problem in Pennsylvania is not just theoretical. It led to an invalid certification of the 2020 election. On December 28, 2020, nearly 2 months after the 2020 election, 16 members of the Pennsylvania legislature put out an urgent press release warning that 202,000 ballots, that's nearly 3% of the total vote, had not been matched to registered voters. They had all of these people in the state house, 16 of them, say, listen, there's 202,000. We don't know where they came from. That's 3%. A high quality data analysis from Verify Vote prepared a meticulous analysis that compared ballots received by each county to the number of registered voters who actually voted in each county. Pennsylvania's unique registration system, called the SURE system. How about that for a name? it's SURE. Chris Krebs. To this day, by the way, that remains one of my favorite clips of all time. The laugh out loud hilarity of Chris Krebs looking into the camera saying 2020 was perfect. The election was perfect. Where is he, by the way? I wonder what happened to him. We need to set that clip alongside the largest, most extensive voter fraud organization in history. That brought to us by the fake leader, of course. So here's VerifyVote. They break it down. It's called Sure System. It says indicates total registered voters as well as the number of registered voters who actually voted in the prior election. For that reason, it is possible to compare ballots to actual registered voters who voted. It says here, VerifyVote purchased voter registration updates from the Pennsylvania Security Secretary of State for each week from late October through to the beginning of February 2021. At all times, there was a voter deficit range from 121,000 to 202,000. It says, as a veteran auditor with over 40 years of experience, I independently obtained registration data and reviewed the VerifyVote analysis extensively. It was completely accurate. So much fraud. Enough fraud to be able to overturn the results of an election. That's what they were able to pull off last time. Will they be able to do it again? Sundance writing about that statement that the president put out, the cease and desist message. He says here, although slightly using a coded message within the spelling, punctuation, and pertinence, the identification DOJ is transparently clear. I hope everyone can see it. The department, what was it? They're basically the department that steals elections. They meddle in elections. In other words, the deep state, they're the ones who interfere. They were the ones behind suppressing the Hunter laptop story. Dana Bash's network went along with it. And she's there talking about memes and how that's going to deceive a 19-year-old. And he may vote differently because he saw a meme. And that the meme was created by a Russian behind a computer. So ridiculous. Push back hard against that. Go on the offensive. Why didn't you? Why did you suppress in the weeks leading up to 2020? Why did you suppress the story about Hunter's laptop, which had all of these connections to these foreign sources and tens of million dollars rolling through, to say nothing of the crack addiction, the prostitutes and everything else? It's pretty amazing. To as I say, the next 8 weeks or so, it's going to be like a roller coaster ride as we watch how that this plays out. But it is fascinating to see Donald Trump appearing to be not just ready for war, but as I said at the start, I mean, going on the offensive. When we come back, we've got a number of other stories to try to hurry through, if possible, before the show time is up, including a couple of items, important items, that came out in this morning's Trumpet Brief, something that we send to all of our email subscribers. And like with all of our literature, there's no cost, no obligation. You can sign up for the email blast at our website, thetrumpet.com. You can subscribe to the Trumpet Magazine, no cost, no obligation. Just call the 800 number, that's 1-866-930-3024. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall, The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
There's been an inversion now where the Republican Party has become the party of the common man, of working people, of the middle class. And the Democratic Party has become the party of Wall Street, of the military-industrial complex, of big pharma, big agriculture, big tech, the big banking systems. And all of the, what Donald Trump calls the deep state, which is this web of financial interests that is not necessarily a little conspiracy, but it's a conspiracy of self-interest that functions together in tandem to shift wealth upward, to clamp down totalitarian controls, and to transform this country from the world's exemplary democracy into a corporate kleptocracy and a very, very oppressive oligarchical system, the kind of system that we fought a revolution to overthrow in 1776.
That's RFK Jr. sitting down with Vivek and, of course, Tucker Carlson, who was in the news for reasons we don't usually see last week when he had on this revisionist historian. Just that the level of ignorance was staggering. And Tucker evidently really admires the historian. I think, you know, I've talked about the broad coalition that Donald Trump is bringing in. What you see on stage right there, I mean, that's a lot of different ideas. That's a lot of different beliefs. That's a lot of different views. And sometimes you can corral them together for one important movement or one common cause, and Donald Trump seems to have been able to do that. But at the same time, just step back for a moment. Think about Judges 21, verse 25, where it says that in these last days, it was, of course, commenting on the period after the Judges, so it's historical too, but there's an end-time application, as there is with so much in Bible prophecy, even the former prophets. There's an end time application. But that verse says, at the end of it all, every man was doing what was right in his own eyes. It was just a free for all. And that's what we're seeing. We need to think ahead long term. We need to take the long view here. Particularly when you think about the sickness from head to toe and how that only God can fix that. Only God can heal that. When Jeroboam comes back, I mean, we've got one final opportunity to turn to God. To turn to God in repentance. And then he'll begin to heal. Then he'll begin to heal us of sickness and disease, spiritually speaking. This guy on with Tucker last week, his name is Daryl Cooper. Never heard of him, but the Free Beacon, writing on that, says the historian Daryl Cooper has argued in an interview on Tucker Carlson's show that Winston Churchill was the chief villain of World War II. I mean, you think about all the things that all these commentators get wrong. Here's one that you think, how could he get this wrong? Churchill's the villain? It's that we have a booklet, by the way. Winston S. Churchill, The Watchman. That's a powerful little booklet with a powerful message. If you don't have that one, you can see the booklet there and the 800 number again. All the literature that we offer is offered without cost or obligation. But anyway, to say Winston Churchill was, quote, the chief villain of World War II, which would be both interesting and indeed shocking were his thesis not based on such staggering ignorance and disregard for historical fact that it is safe to disregard completely. I mean, Andrew Roberts, I think Victor Davis Hanson also had some rebuke for this guy, Daryl Cooper. But Andrew Roberts wrote that fascinating biography. And I mean, he was pretty open in that about some of Churchill's flaws. He says in this column here that Churchill himself said he made a lot of mistakes. His wife acknowledged that. But to say he was the villain in World War II, and for Tucker Carlson, of all people, to just nod along, it is staggering. He's right about this, Andrew Roberts. Cooper then alleged, again, without any evidence, that Churchill won at war because the long-term interests of the British Empire were threatened by the rise of a power like Germany. Again, not so. All senior British policymakers recognized that the threats to the empire came from Japan and the Far East, fascist Italy and Northeast Africa, and Russia in the Near East. Germany had no contiguous borders with the British Empire anywhere. A glance at a map would have shown Cooper that. And then it says here, listen to this, when Carlson commended Cooper's belief in accuracy and honesty, it provided the only comic moment on the whole interview, unless one also counts Carlson's estimation that Cooper, of whom I confess I had not hitherto heard, is, quote, the most important historian in the United States. Not someone like Victor Davis Hanson, but this guy who says Churchill's the villain. I guess, does that make Hitler the hero? Really shocking stuff here. It says here, it was remarkable that in the whole interview, Daryl Cooper was not able to land a single blow on the reputation of Winston Churchill that was backed up by any evidence whatsoever. And then he goes on to talk about how that Churchill admitted to making many mistakes. Of course, for all those years, he was in the wilderness. His political career seemed to be dead, but God had other purposes in mind. God brought him back from the dead, politically speaking. Sound familiar? See, we're seeing some of that happen today. It's pretty amazing. Again, just go and think on that Judges 21:25 verse. Another book I can just throw out there in passing here is the Former Prophets book, which goes through so much of that history in the early chapters of the Bible and shows us also the prophetic significance. I mentioned Richard Palmer's trumpet brief, coming back to the illegal immigration nightmare, the invasion at the U.S. southern border. I mean, I saw some of this over the weekend and was just shaking my head. It's unbelievable what's happening to America's cities, not just the big ones either. This is that small town in Ohio that had just, 40 or 50,000 people? And they welcome in 20,000 migrants from Haiti. It says Canada geese and ducks are at the top of the news today as residents of Springfield, Ohio, claim that illegal immigrants from Haiti are eating all the wildlife and even pets. I mean, there was this story of town residents that were horrified at these Haitians that were taking a family pet, a cat, and carving it up for mealtime. It says here, the town has a population of 60,000, but 20,000 Haitian immigrants have recently moved in. Of course, there have been much more serious problems with an 11-year-old boy killed in a school bus crash caused by an illegal Haitian immigrant. But eating animals is what caught the internet's attention, with things like ducks for Trump and AI images of the former president trending on X. I mean, that never ceases to amaze me either, where you see all these horrific atrocities carried out against people, human beings. But, you know, not that it's right to do it with an animal or a pet, but what catches the attention of social media? It's not the 11-year-old boy that's killed by the illegal immigrant. When they get to the cat, now we'll give it some attention. But what is happening? What is happening? It says some of this is lighthearted, but migration is a serious subject. Our main story today. Well, that's again from this morning's Trumpet brief. There's also a piece in there about the 350-page report into the Afghanistan withdrawal from the House Foreign Affairs Committee, shedding more light, as Richard Palmer writes, on a dark aspect of the Biden administration. Pete Buttigieg, I think he's the transportation guy. I'm not sure what he does. But he was upset that this report comes out at this time, because, you know, it's an election season. And, you know, usually Congress and the DOJ, usually they don't interfere. But you see the radical left, how upset they get when some unflattering news or reports come out in the lead up to an election cycle. This is clip 5.
Tomorrow, we expect the House Foreign Affairs Committee to release the findings of its 3-year investigation into what happened. How does Kamala Harris defend what we all saw?
First of all, of course, I haven't seen what's in the report coming out tomorrow, but I do have a question about what they're doing over there. If they've had 3 years to assess what happened, why are they delivering a report after Labor Day in a presidential election year?
There you go. How do you defend what you did? And his response, how do they release a report after Labor Day? What? No. Here again, if you have a more serious-minded reporter, now, I didn't see the rest of this segment. Maybe she followed up. I suspect she didn't. If it's the same Dana Bash that we've seen in some of these other segments, how do you defend what you did? 13 American soldiers were slaughtered because of that hasty withdrawal, to say nothing of the Afghans that suffered, and all the military hardware we just gifted to the Taliban. It was a complete and total disaster. How do you defend that? Well, listen, Labor Day, election cycle, who are they to release a report? It's about what you'd expect from a politician, particularly coming from the communist left. This last bit here, this is from Sundance. He's commenting on the Georgia shooter and how that they indicted the father as well. They accused him of, I think it's, manslaughter. It's not like that happens all the time. But like I noted last week, and Sundance kind of picks up on the same point, but as I noted, if you can get to the father of the mass shooter the day after the incident happens, what about Thomas Crooks' dad? What about his parents? Have they even been interviewed? I assume they have by the FBI, your FBI. But what was the revelation to come out of that interview? What's the information that the general public would like to know? They nearly murdered Donald Trump. But just coming back to this story in Georgia, it says this is an interesting aspect to the latest school shooting in Georgia, and I'm not sure exactly what to think of this new approach. The father, Colt Gray, has been arrested and charged with 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter, 2 counts of second-degree murder, and 8 counts of cruelty to children. And he goes on and explains how the father, I guess, bought the rifle for the son. And so it seems like, you know, he wasn't a very good dad to have done this, someone underage and that sort of thing. So he got the weapon from the dad. But it says, on its face, this does seem like the action of a reckless parent in purchasing a firearm for his son just after there was evidence linking the son to online threats of violence. And yes, factually, there are several precedents for parents being held criminally responsible for the actions of their minor children. However, I'm not sure about the criminal justice system being consistent and charging a parent with second-degree murder. What Sundance is concerned about here is the inconsistency in the criminal justice system, in the Department of Justice, to look at it more broadly. He says there are hundreds of non-school fatal shootings that could be tied to the reckless action of parents, either by willful blindness or complicity, some in gang-related killings. Do you ever hear of any parents of gang members that are hauled in and charged with second-degree murder? It says here, is it just the venue, the school shooting aspect, that suddenly draws the attention toward the father, Colin Gray? What about the youth shootings in Chicago, Los Angeles, or Baltimore that are carried out by underage teens, and yet the parents are never charged? Why is that? Why do we know nothing about Thomas Crooks' parents? I mean, I guess he wasn't a minor in that sense, although the photo they send out of him is from his junior high years. But still, just to go with Sundance's point, what about the gang members in Chicago and Baltimore? 14-year-olds. I mean, we're hearing migrant crime where 14-year-olds are stabbing people to death or raping them. Where are the parents? And why don't we see a criminal justice system that eager to go after parents in some of those cases? Some good questions that Sundance brings up. Well, I went through the Andrew Roberts stuff. I think I've about covered just about everything. I can conclude today with a few emails. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. Also, the Rumble channel allows for you to leave some comments down below the daily posting. You can also jump into the live chat if you wish. It says here, your show is an oasis in a desert that lacks truth. Keep up the good work. Another one says, deeply moved by the Bible study segment from Friday. Another one says, yes, sir, you do have the fastest hour in broadcasting. The Bible studies are second to none. I think I might have read some of these previously, so I'll skip down a bit. Another one says, I've noticed lately that Kamala doesn't cackle anymore. Her handlers must have told her to stop the cackling. Maybe they told her to stop the cackling and to replace it with the different accents. Maybe we can play that Megyn Kelly clip. Where was that? Clip 16.
Without voter suppression,
the accent is back.
Stacey Abrams would be the governor of Georgia. Andrew Gillum is the governor of Florida.
First, we saw her develop the magical accent when she was down south.
I'm going to get into some business now. Okay.
And now it's back.
You all helped us win in 2020, and we're going to do it again in 2024.
We're going to beat him in November.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
We all know you don't talk like that. You've been vice president for 4 years.
He does not walk it like he talks it.
She doesn't talk like this.
When we get this done together, my friend.
I know how to talk to you. I mean, come on.
Well, I see people testifying. Can I get a witness?
And they know. Yeah. We all know she's just a big walking bag of artifice.
You think you just fell out of a coconut tree?
There you go. Should be an interesting debate tomorrow night. Another one here says, do you know if your father will be adding on to his book, America Under Attack? If so, I would like to add my name onto the waiting list. I think that was in the latest coworker letter that he sent out a week or so ago, where he talked about some of the updates he's making. It seems like, well, really, he does this with most all of his books. They're always a work in progress, but America Under Attack, there's always some additional material to put into that publication, especially after a year or two. Another one says, another great show today on the RFK Jr. bombshell. So that's from a week or two ago. If you'd like to email the program and give us some lovely feedback, or even if it's not so lovely, we'll take it. You can email us, td@thetrumpet.com. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.